From the Radio Ranch, in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Wednesday, November 20th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Hey there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth. The kid with the patriotic red, white, blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get things officially started with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. It says here, the bank of friendship cannot exist for long without deposits. Well, nor can it be maintained without interest.
Oh, I like that.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted History.
Let's do this.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
So I heard.
Some cool, some not so cool.
Oh, boy.
Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
Is that so?
You might be quizzed.
Yeah, right.
Well, kids, it was on this day in 1947. Princess Elizabeth married Lieutenant Philip Mountbatten, who became the Duke of Edinburgh, at Westminster Abbey in London. That's where they have those big weddings. It was a huge affair with a lot of uniformed people marching around in orderly columns, going to the left, going to the right, going straight ahead, some in circles. It's what royals do, you know. And they get paid very well for it, too. And it was on this day in 1985, Microsoft Windows 1.0, the first graphical personal computer operating system developed by Microsoft, was released, for better or for worse, depending on what you use the system for, I guess. But hey, it was a start.
Trust me, I know I'm good at this stuff.
Over the last 4 years, I have asked, not entirely rhetorically, mind you, how it is that Joe Biden could have left the border open. Not just the southern border, all our borders, really. So I should say borders. How he could leave the borders open the way he did. And just let anybody and everybody who wants in. And not be prosecuted for something like, I don't know, think of something. How about treason? Well, the Venezuelan prison gang known as Tren de Aragua, or for short, I call him TDA, has now expanded its territory to at least 16 U.S. states, an area that includes half of America's population. Now, Homeland Security officials last week were warned in an internal Department of Intelligence memo about TDA's growing presence across the country, most recently in Washington, D.C., Virginia, Montana, and Wyoming. Now, the gang already has footholds in New York, New Jersey, California, Florida, Illinois, Georgia, Louisiana, Nevada, North Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, Wisconsin, and Colorado, according to the memo and previous reporting by our friends at the New York Post. Now, the New York Post, owned by the same company that owns the Fox News Channel. Now, the gang has only increased its violent tendencies as it spreads, and that shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. Tren de Aragua's arrival in the nation's capital and nearby Virginia coincided with increases in migrant populations there. So you see, the pattern is easy to follow, where you have large clumps of migrant groups setting up shop. In comes TDA, because the TDA is nothing more than a bunch of shakedown artists taking over apartment complexes, running roughshod over these, I'll say, defenseless migrants. Now, the memo warned, quote, as the population of Venezuelan nationals continues to increase, the potential for violent TDA migrants is highly probable. Gee, you think? In one run-in with the gang in Virginia, cops in Fairfax County arrested three suspected members in August of 2023 for shoplifting. And one of the suspects had a fake Venezuelan ID, and all three had the gang's signature tattoos. Gang's members are targeting the D.C. area because They can travel with ease to nearby suburbs in Northern Virginia to carry out thefts, robberies, and assaults. And its members are increasingly engaged in lower-level fraud and theft schemes, sending their stolen funds back to South America as a means of financing additional criminal enterprises. All of this is in the memo. Now, there was one case cited where a suspected Trendy Aragua member withdrew $118,000 from a Florida bank account with fraudulent check deposits and wired the money to bank accounts in Venezuela before any fraud was detected. Now, these guys are not only criminals, they're smart. Well, the sheriff of Wyoming's most populous county said that while he wouldn't say they've established a presence, he's currently holding a suspected TDA member in his jail. So, let's see, the sheriff in question is Brian Kozak of Laramie County. He says, we have a person in our jail who's suspected of being TDA, who's being held for trial in December for being in possession of a car that was stolen in Colorado. And then he says, this is the only arrest of a possible TDA member in Wyoming, and he was just passing through when he was arrested. We've not seen an increase in Venezuelan immigrants in Wyoming, especially the criminal gang type. Knock on wood, pal. Thank God we have a president coming into the White House in January. He's going to put an end to this crap. And thank God for Tom Holman. Well, TDA members embedded themselves in the waves of millions of migrants across the U.S.-Mexico border during the entire Biden-Harris administration. With no information sharing between the U.S. and Venezuela to detect the gang members, they were very easily released into the U.S. And that's according to U.S. Border Patrol sources. Currently, the U.S. Border Patrol may still be under the control of the Biden administration, but you have people within the Border Patrol who are trying to do their very best to let the rest of us know what's really going on. Now, further complicating the tragic and desperate, disastrous situation is a fraught relationship between the Biden-Harris administration and Venezuela's Maduro regime. And that Maduro regime, which of course, you know, it's communist, refuses to accept deportation flights carrying Venezuelans from the U.S., back to the South American country. And to my mind, to my feeble mind, the only way then that you can solve the problem is lock them all up. But are there too many of them to lock them all up? I don't think so. Especially if you were to privatize the prison system in certain areas of the country. Eh? Now, President-elect Trump, or I'm sorry, that's President Trump, has said that cracking down on TDA is going to be a top priority for his administration, which he says will carry out an historic mass deportation effort, leveraging not only ICE, but also the U.S. military. And that's the only way you're going to succeed at this. You must use the military as well. In New York, TDA members have engaged in shootings of cops, assaults, snatch-and-grab robberies, and gun smuggling into migrant shelters. The gang's also said to be engaged in sex trafficking, of course, of migrant women on Roosevelt Avenue in Queens, specifically, an area where that sort of thing has been going on. They have moved in to take it over pretty much. And outside of Democratic sanctuary cities and states, TDA's established itself in other unlikely areas of the country. Tennessee Bureau of Investigation Director David Rausch was on Fox and Friends on Friday. He said that the gang's been running human trafficking rings in Nashville, Memphis, Knoxville, and Chattanooga. My God. He said they go from human trafficking to organized retail crime theft, and then they move into the drug trade, taking on the cartels in very violent, bloody battles that they've had. And the sad part about all of this is we already know this. We know this is happening. We know where it's happening. And we know why it's happening. And the sad part about this is Joe Biden. Now, for that matter, not just Joe Biden, but no one within the Biden regime or the deep state will be held accountable for this. Wow, this was classic. Megyn Kelly on her program, her podcast on SiriusXM, excoriated MSLSD Morning Joe hosts and Donald Trump detractors. Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski, they're married now, aren't they? She used to be his side piece, but they're married now. And anyhow, Megyn excoriated them as dishonest jokes after they revealed on their show Monday morning that they met with Donald Trump in Florida.
I searched for a way to respond appropriately, and I called on my 10 years as a litigator in addition to my now 20 as a journalist, and I think I found the perfect phrase, go f*** yourselves. Go f*** yourselves, you dishonest jokes of faux journalists. What an absurd farce that was, Glenn. Which one was insincere? He's Hitler? Or now we're going to speak truth to power and find a way of speaking to and working with Donald Trump? Which one was a lie?
You can tell she was pretty angry. And she did outline prior to that that statement. You notice I had to alter a couple of, well, it was one word, but I had to alter it twice there. And I understand her anger because I'm right there alongside her in this. But she prefaced that by telling her listeners that those two, Joe and Mika, had a personal sit-down with Trump after reaching out to him. Now, I suspect that upper-level management at MSNBC, which upper-level management, I'm sure, eventually works its way over to the upper-level management at NBC, probably told them to reach out to Donald Trump. Okay. But she was right when she said that was what an absurd farce that was. Now, those two, Mika and Joe, faced a lot of criticism among commentators all over the place on both the left and the right. Okay, we could expect it from the right, but the left as well. Yeah. And let's see, Scarborough is 61, Brzezinski's 57, they should know better, and they repeatedly slammed Trump as a racist and fascist leading up to the election, particularly. The closer they got to the election, the worse the rhetoric got. And it was just at the point where even short clips that I would find on the internet, because I can't stand to watch their show, not that I would anyhow, but I've seen clips, small clips, and even those are revolting. So Megyn pointed out the co-host initially helped pump up Trump's first run for the White House starting in 2015 when he consistently called into their show. In fact, she even played a clip of Scarborough saying he would be open to serving as Trump's running mate before taking aim at Trump. My, how things change, right? So Megyn said it's nauseating. It's so stomach turning. They're so disgusting. And then what happened is Joe Scarborough found out he was not going to be the vice presidential running mate. So, well, and then she pointed out, too, that Scarborough had been rejected for that position. And then they turned on him. They turned on him because access to power is everything to that small little man. In fact, I think as part of his resume, Joe Scarborough at one time was a Republican representative from Florida. Do I have that right? I'm going to have to look that up. But anyhow, Megyn went on to ding Scarborough and Brzezinski over their support of President Biden, even as questions swirled about Biden's cognitive fitness leading up to his train wreck debate with Trump. My God, a debate for the books. And then she said, in reference to Scarborough and Trump being on talking terms again, she said, literally no one wants to see this fence mended. I sure don't. And Brzezinski, in defending the decision to talk with Trump, noted that a series of controversies surrounding the incoming president didn't stop people from voting for him over Harris. I know for a fact, I don't know much about Scarborough's personal feelings toward Trump, but I know Mika Brzezinski can't stand him. So she says, Joe and I realize it's time to do something different, and that starts with not only talking about Donald Trump, but also talking with him. Hey, I'm telling you, these two were ordered by management at the network to do something. And then Scarborough added, don't be mistaken, we're not here to defend or normalize Donald Trump during the show. Probably not. And I would be disappointed further in you two if you did. You're nothing but a bunch of lying, two-faced hypocrites, and you're on TV because they had that massive hole in the mornings on the network that they wanted to fill with left-wing propaganda, and nobody does it better than you guys. Given President Trump's first experience as president, he's learned a lot. He's learned that you can't trust the Democrats. Absolutely. And his co-campaign manager, a fellow by the name of Chris LaCivita, suggested on X Sunday evening that Bucks County commissioners, including board chair Diane Ellis Marseglia, are going to go to jail because of their decision to defy a Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruling on mail ballots. Now, Democrat-led election boards, including in Philadelphia, Bucks, Montgomery, and Center counties, have decided to count undated ballots, despite a pair of rulings from the Pennsylvania Supreme Court barring their inclusion. Now, when the Supreme Court makes a ruling like that, it is law. So they're defying the law. And the move by the boards has come under national scrutiny now as Pennsylvania's U.S. Senate race went into an automatic recount under state law. So then you've got Republican Dave McCormick, who was declared the winner by the Associated Press, leading Democrat Senator Bob Casey by less than half a percentage point. So Republicans have accused Casey's campaign, without evidence, of coordinating with Democrat-led election boards in an effort to reverse the outcome of the race by voting to include the ballots against the court order. And Democrat officials have framed it as intended to ensure voters' voices are heard despite the errors or omissions, of course. But here again, this is just more of the same of what we have come to expect from Democrats. The only way they can fight is by fighting dirty. Because at the very core of what they do, the very core of what they believe, the very core of what they're trying to accomplish is all fraudulent. I wanted to do this story the other day, but I just didn't have time. Donald Trump is tapping FCC Commissioner Brendan Carr, who's been rather outspoken about the epidemic of partisan media outlets and their attempts to influence elections. He's going to chair the agency in a move that has mainstream media outlets on edge. And Trump wrote in a Truth Social post on Sunday night, let me read that to you. It says, I'm pleased to announce that Commissioner Brendan Carr will be chairman of the Federal Communications Commission. Commissioner Carr currently serves as the senior Republican on the FCC. Before that, he was the FCC's general counsel. Now, Trump noted that he first nominated Carr to the position in 2017. Saying his current term runs through 2029, and because of his great work, I will now be designating him as permanent chairman. Now, the appointment naturally sent shockwaves throughout the media landscape, because Carr has previously detailed a number of monumental moves that would roll back the reach of partisan media outlets. Because if you're like a member of my generation, or even the generation younger than mine, if you have a certain memory dating back to the 1960s, so I guess I would narrow it down to mostly baby boomers. You don't remember the media being so partisan. Well, it wasn't. Not back in those days. I mean, they always did lean left. But it really got ramped up during the Vietnam War. And it's never been tamped down since. So, last month, when CBS News was accused of editing the Kamala Harris interview with 60 Minutes, well, Brendan Carr raised the alarm over the severity of the allegations and called for a thorough investigation. Well, the network's been under intense scrutiny since, because they aired two separate broadcasts with different answers from Harris to the same question. And interviewer Bill Whitaker asked whether Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu is listening to the Biden-Harris administration. And there were two distinct answers to the question on the part of Harris. There was the answer she gave, and then the answer that CBS aired, which was the answer CBS wanted you to hear. Pretty interesting stuff. So when CBS and its subsidiaries go to renew their broadcasting licenses, a Republican-led FCC could place certain restrictions on a renewal agreement, including a stipulation that the 60 Minutes transcript would be released and other mandates, is that the right word? Other directives, okay? And this is according to an FCC source speaking to the Daily Caller. Now, Carr's appointment spooked CNN's Brian Stelter, who I really don't regard as a serious journalist. He's not, but he's just a guy who was very lucky to get the jobs that he did. And he took issue with the soon-to-be FCC chairman's criticism of pro-censorship outlets like NewsGuard. And remember I told you about NewsGuard, geez, a couple of years ago. NewsGuard is just a news-checking organization with extreme left-wing leanings. And what they do is they grade news outlets. But they grade them according to how leftist they are. In other words, if they're left-leaning, they're a believable news source. But if they're right-leaning, well, you can't trust them. So NewsGuard is a farce. And they just seek to demonetize and deplatform right-leaning media outlets. NewsGuard really should be taken down. But they exist thanks to the First Amendment. Now, Carr wrote in an X post earlier this week. He said, Facebook, Google, Apple, Microsoft, and others have played central roles in the censorship cartel. The Orwellian-named NewsGuard, along with fact-checking groups and ad agencies, helped enforce one-sided narratives. The censorship cartel must be dismantled. Well, it should. I've been screaming about this for years. This censorship industrial complex, the media industrial complex. And that's exactly what it is. When you look at the companies, the six companies that actually own virtually all of our media in this country. I'm not talking about the little mom and pop newspapers or mom and pop radio stations in small towns scattered about the country. I'm talking about the big networks. They're all owned by one of six companies. That is a media industrial complex. And they all lean one way. That little California worm, Adam Schiff, is doubling down on his false and unfounded claims of Trump-Russian collusion. Still on that bandwagon, and he was appearing on CNN's State of the Union with Jake Tapper the other day, and Tapper questioned Schiff regarding Donald Trump's recent cabinet picks, which included Florida Representative Matt Gaetz and former presidential candidate RFK Jr. And Tapper says, you were censured in the House last year for, in their view, holding positions of power during the Trump presidency as chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. And according to them, abusing this trust by saying there was evidence of collusion between Trump's campaign and Russia. And I wonder if you're feeling at all introspective about that was. Now, I'm reading this from a transcript. about that was, according to Mueller, the Mueller report, and according to your Republican colleagues, an overstatement. And I wonder if you think in any way you helped set the table for these disruptors. And so Schiff's answer, he says, well, first of all, it wasn't an overstatement. See, he still insists that he has evidence of Russia collusion with Trump, which, of course, is all bullcorn. And so he says, he doubles down, he says, there is evidence of collusion. The Trump campaign manager was meeting with Russian intelligence and giving them internal polling data, just to give you one example. And the Mueller report sets all this out. So then Tapper followed up by saying, it does say the investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in its election interference activities, which doesn't mean that he didn't, that there weren't meetings, but they didn't find evidence of it. So then Schiff said, Mueller says that too. He says the fact that we didn't find proof beyond a reasonable doubt doesn't mean there wasn't evidence of conspiracy or coordination. Well, the House of Representatives, I don't know if you recall this, censured Schiff in 2023 in a party line vote for his repeated allegations that Trump's 2016 campaign conspired with Russia to gain the presidency. Earlier that year, he was also dismissed from the House Intelligence Committee, which gave me some real hope that maybe there is a God over politics. So anyhow, this little worm from California still insists that there is, right now as I speak, Russia-Trump collusion. And I hate to tell this guy this, but Adam Schiff is going down. He has a sufficient amount of competition for his seat out of California. And I really don't see how Adam Schiff can stay afloat much longer as a prominent politician in Washington. If he stays in office at all, he's really going to be pretty much quarantined idealistically. And he's going to be losing any power that he at any time may have had. I think we need to move over to the comedy corner. Got Gordon Douglas this time around.
I love what I do. I would have never thought 30 years ago I would be in 41 states and four countries getting to share laughter with people. Is that an awesome job or what? And we need it, right? We need it more than ever. It's interesting though, but as I travel the country, I notice not everybody's as fun as you guys. People in New England, little stuffy. A lot of arms crossed, a lot of frowns. I don't know. What's the problem up there? I don't know. I was doing a show in the grand ballroom of the Holiday Inn, and right across the street was a NASCAR race. I never put that together. NASCAR in New England? I don't get NASCAR anyway. I'm a little ADD. What's the appeal? Boo, 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 boo. I don't get it. I was getting ready for my sound check. These guys came in wearing their jackets, Team Toyota, Team Chevrolet, talking about gear ratios and tread depths and watch turn number four. I don't get it. I don't even know what NASCAR stands for. I had to Google it. Do you know? It's a non-athletic sport centered around rednecks. That's what I found. Crazy stuff. Yeah, they're a little proud of their town up there in Boston, too. They took me a little tour, took a drive around. We went by the airport. And they said, oh, look, there's the Patriots airplane. Like, I couldn't tell. Right? There's a whole logo, Patriots, over the whole airplane. I knew it was theirs. The tires were underinflated. I knew it. I was just saying. I'm just saying. There is a state I haven't been in, but I just got invited to do four shows in Alaska. My agent called, whoa, that's awesome stuff. I said, will I be entertaining Eskimos? She said, oh, Gordon, we don't say Eskimo anymore. It's not politically correct. I said, what do you call them? She said, frozen Americans. Yeah. And it's going to be in February. I don't know how cold that is, but last February, I was in Toronto, and it was cold. How cold was it? I saw a rap singer pulling up his pants. It was that cold. Crazy stuff. I started comedy in 1977. I was on Carol Burnett in 1977. Can you imagine that? truly as nice in person as she is on TV. Oh, the cat, it was just wonderful. I was just an extra, but what a claim on my resume. That is good stuff. But I get interviewed a lot. In 30 years, 3,000 shows, do you have a favorite audience? I don't have to think. I don't have to think at all. Three words, women of faith. 20,000 women and me. I felt like a piece of chocolate cake at a Weight Watchers convention.
Get out there and have a terrific day. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's bombastic blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.